shadow is on the park, then the applicant needs to work with the design team and design commission to figure out how you would do things like step back your building, maybe provide a setback, so we don't have as much shade on the building. The whole purpose of that shadow study is to make sure we provide light and air to the park blocks. So staff wouldn't recommend amending the heights because we feel that the shadow study requirement will help get us there to meet that purpose of making sure that there is sunlight and air along the park blocks.
Commissioner Dade, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not feeling well at all and having a little hard time tracking all of this information. But I had raised an issue with this. First of all, what is the current height restriction? I'm sorry if you've already said that.
So the heights vary along the park
they
blocks
do.
Today.
Okay.
That's right. So and they, so for example, down in the area around PSU, we have base heights of 100 feet. And as you head north through Bonus, you may be able to get to 175. Heading further north towards Burnside, again, base heights could be at 250 with a chance to get to 460. North of Burnside, it really fluctuates. Again, a base height of 100 with the ability to get to 250. But anytime you're going to propose a project that's going to go above that base height, the shadow study will kick in.
Okay, so we're not giving additional height. We're just saying we don't think we need to restrict it because we have this shadow study requirement in place.
That's staff's recommendation, that through the shadow study, that study will make sure that sufficient setbacks of the building and step backs in the building will occur to make sure that the shadows on the park are limited at certain times of day and days of the year.
And I raise this just because the park blocks are really kind of a unique treasure in our city, and they already get quite a bit of shade from existing buildings and canopy, and I was just concerned that we were going to allow more. So thanks for the explanation, and I don't feel like I need to pursue this unless someone else wants to jump on in. Thanks.
All right, very good. Thank you, Commissioner Udaly. B8. And it's my understanding B8 has already been moved and seconded, so this is really just discussion. Is that correct?
Yes, that's
okay.
Right. So
this
is the existing amendment for the Morrison Bridgehead, and it's already on the list, as the mayor has said. And the amendment, so I'll just explain here on the left-hand side, what we have is what exists today, which is at the bridgehead, the heights are 75 feet, and Commissioner Fritz's amendment is to maintain those existing conditions with that height. The proposal, which is on the map to your right, is that the base height doesn't change. It stays at 75 feet with the potential for bonus height to 250. So that is both the recommended draft and then Commissioner Fritz's amendment. I would just want to turn it over to you then if you'd like to have any further discussion related to that.
Well, thank you. As it shows from the map here, it again would not have a step down to the river because the parcels behind are already developed at 235. So that would definitely block out their views. Again, when you look at the map of the historic districts, there's the Yamhill on one side, there's the Skidmore on the other side. So having a huge building at the end of the bridgehead doesn't seem to me to be appropriate. It's going to be blocking views from the east side to the west side, and it's also going to be impeding traffic, which the Morrison is one of the main routes that Central East Side Industrial Area gets its freight to I-5 going south. So I've got multiple other responses, but that's just basically it, that I think of all the properties with potential conflicts of interest, that's the one that's most troubling.
So could I hear the staff rationale, and Commissioner Fritz has done a very good job of explaining her rationale, and she and I have had conversations about this. Taking into account what the current policy has been with regard to stepping down to the river, and juxtaposing that against some of the conversations we've had about the potential for these sites to be difficult to develop and or the opportunity for signature developments here as a gateway entry to the city. Tell me how with the height proposal in place, the bonusable up to 250, how could you reconcile or how could you guide the future of that site? I mean, it's nice to sit here and think we could get a marquee signature development opportunity there that's an amazing entryway to the city, but there's no real guarantee of that. So what gives you confidence that this is the right thing to do, or alternatively, what information do you have to suggest that this is a particularly difficult site to develop under the current height restrictions?
So the site itself, although these maps are not showing it, of course, two-thirds of it are ramps off of the Morrison Bridge. So there's major transportation infrastructure that's impacting the site. We explored for a good while how to develop in and around those ramps. So one of the obstacles to overcome is the cost to sufficiently sort of rearrange and re-engineer those ramps to keep them in service or not. The policy guidance we have on that is that even on those ramps, it's the northern ramp is important for the central east side and the access to the freeway for our freight on the central east side, and we have that industrial sanctuary policy. So that one, in our balancing of policies, we all expect stays in service, or some version of it does. The one on the south side may be more adjustable. So it's got to be big enough to warrant that kind of investment and trouble. At the same time, we have the step down to the river policy. We also have had, since the 80s, a policy of animating the riverfront, of connecting the two sides of the river and bringing activity down to Waterfront Park and to the riverfront. Part of as the commissioner said, we have two very important historic districts that are along this stretch of NATO too. So they are what they are. We're going to protect them, but they're always going to be a smaller scale because that's part of their character. So the opportunities to bring more square feet, more people, more residential units, more office users down to this edge and have sort of quick and animating access to Waterfront Park and the activities there and this part of our downtown, they're limited. They happen to align with our bridgeheads. And we have the two that we focused on in this plan are the Hawthorne Bridgehead and the Morrison Bridgehead. The Hawthorne Bridgehead is a bigger district, so I think it's a little easier to see. The Morrison Bridgehead is just these three blocks. I mean, it's relatively tight. So that's the principles. It's step down to the river. The parts that step down to the river that we tried to honor is that, you know, even though it's a taller height, it grades up as you go back towards the transit mall in the heart of downtown. Part of step down to the river in the business district was you, even if you're three blocks off the river, you get views. If you get tall enough, because each of those blocks gets to be taller than the one closer to the waterfront. That so, kind of principle stays.
So how did you pick the 250 versus, say, a 235?
You know, I think we looked at it in terms of our standard sort of central city building height modules, what the floor area, how much floor area we're also allowing on these blocks. And so what's reasonable to give them a chance to design. Part of what, you know, the extra height here allows you to do, too, is deal with the fact that your floor plates are going to have to potentially be non-standard to deal with the transportation infrastructure. And we looked at shadow analysis for how that would impact Waterfront Park. And much beyond 250, we thought was too impactful for too long.
If you came down to 235, do you believe that substantially impacts the economics to the degree that you won't get a development there? Is that your concern?
No, I believe that 235, 250, given this site, given our market, is probably not that significant a difference.
Okay, and then just one.
There's no specific program that we have for the site. Maybe at one time, Mayor, when we were in earlier in the quadrant plans, there was sort of active discussion of development. Remember, the public market was part of this.
Sure,
but yeah. This is just a site now; it doesn't have that.
So let me ask you just one last question, and I'll stop here. So you mentioned there's the transportation infrastructure, the Morrison on ramps, off ramps, all of that. Is the burden on the developer to deal with those issues? Where does that burden lie? Is that with the city? Is it with the county? Is it with the developer? Is it with all three?
It's with all three. I believe if Mauricio Leclerc's here, I'd ask him to chime in if I'm going to get this wrong. There's a county ownership involved in here too, because
sure.
These are bridge facilities, so somebody's going to have to pay to make these changes happen. What we've always assumed is the project's going to carry that.
Isn't the assumption, though, that the developer will, why are you providing, I'm trying to figure out why you need the additional height to incentivize them if they're not the ones bearing the cost?
No, the assumption is that the project would bear that cost.
The project would bear that cost.
Yeah, it's just a county facility.
Okay, that's all I needed to know. Yeah. Thank you. So this has been moved and seconded. I don't know if people have other
I have just a question, and I mean this question to be provocative. There's a big split of opinion about how we should develop these bridgeheads. It's reflected in some of the conversations on this council. Is the eastern end of the Burnside Bridge at the Burnside Bridgehead, is that a cautionary tale, or is that a model?
Well, it depends on how you look at the architecture.
Well, by the way,
I
understand.
Well answered, Joe.
I think I read somewhere that it sold recently, and it's the most valuable real estate, one of the most expensive buildings that's been turned over. So there's no accounting for certain things. More generally.
Commissioner, I think I would be misrepresenting if I could guarantee world-class architecture based on the moves that we're talking about today.
Architecture aside, the size and the scale of that building and its location.
That's an odd, that's a different sort of circumstance because there's this industrial land between the waterfront and that sort of little quadrant there. And I'm not even really sure what the maximum heights are allowed there. I would argue that having a tall building at that bridgehead is not a problem. The architecture may not be warranting this sort of aspiration we have for these gateways to the central city. But having a tall building there is actually, in an urban design sense, makes sense.
Very good. So this will come back then as part of the hearing package on January 18th. Is that correct?
Yes.
Very good. So the next set of issues relate to scenic views. And C1 is the view of the city skyline from the I-84 overpass. I think that's Commissioner Saltzman. So why don't we skip that one for the moment? Same with C2 and C3. Let's hold off. And I hear a door opening. What's that?
Leaving.
This is scintillating. Why would anybody be leaving? The C4, the view of Mount Hood from Salmon Springs.
All right, let me jump ahead. Mindy Brooks with Planning and Sustainability. And we'll jump ahead, and then we can jump back once Saltzman is here.
Great.
Let me turn my page. So this one was already entered as an amendment and seconded. So we're just mostly bringing it back so there can be discussion. And I was just going to do a quick summary again of the issues surrounding this one. So today there are five locations where you can see Mount Hood from the riverfront along the west side. And the one that could be protected is the one from Salmon Springs. It's the right location if you're going to protect a view. It also has the least impact of the five on development. But it does have considerable impact anyway on the central east side. So it would require a reduction of today's heights, which are 100 to 200, bonusable to 175 to 275. It would need to come down along the MLK Grand Corridor to 50 to 55 feet with no bonus option. And the other complicating factor here is that this area is a streetcar local improvement district for the streetcar along MLK Grand. And there are 29 properties in the view corridor that were assessed as part of that. And that assessment did include many factors, including allowable height and FAR. And with the height reductions, the base FAR could not be utilized on those sites. And I'll just stop there and turn it over to you for discussion or questions.
Yeah, good. I mean, this has been a really, this is a difficult one for me. Of all the decisions in this package, it's probably been the hardest, and it's been somewhat entertaining to speak to other people who have also held six different positions on this particular one. I think it is important that we protect critical view corridors. This one is difficult, however, because there is definitely going to be an impact in terms of the long-term goals around development in the Central East Side. And this, of course, cuts a swath right in the middle of it. We had testimony 3-ish weeks ago from some folks who are serving on that advisory committee. They also wrestled with this, and ultimately they decided to go on the side of not protecting this particular view corridor, but they expressed the importance of making sure that we do protect other corridors. Similarly, the Planning and Sustainability Commission had also, I believe, had the opportunity to look at this, and they had gone back and forth and ultimately sided on the side of supporting the long-term goals for the Central East Side. So I just want to put out there that this one, I think, is very challenging. I don't want to tip my hand to Commissioner Saltzman's protections on view corridors, but I'll just say I'm inclined to support those. This one, if I had to take a vote today, I'm 51% opposed to protecting that view corridor. But we have until January 18th, so we'll see what happens. Commissioner Fritz?
So you want to keep it on the table?
It's already on the table. We already.
It's already been moved and seconded.
I'm sorry, I stepped out of the room for a second.
The person who moved and seconded it, withdraw it.
No need for a second.
We're coming back to yours.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No need
for
a
second. Oh, we voted no on all your stuff.
Okay.
Do you want to clarify?
I left the room. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think since it's been moved and seconded, it's on the table, and then if no one votes for it later, then it just goes away or, okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I wanted it on the table because I wanted to hear the public testimony and I wanted to hear the professional testimony. I'm glad we've had the conversation. It's been useful for me. So with that, we will move back to C1, which is the view of the city skyline from the I-84 overpass. Commissioner Saltzman's items. And we'll start Mindy.
Yeah. I'll just jump back to that one here.
We just skipped around.
Okay. So
fire going on, as you can tell.
This is a view of the city skyline from 12th Avenue overpass over I-84, and this view has been protected since 1991 with height restrictions. Through this process, staff proposed moving the viewpoint from 12th Avenue, which is circled in red, to a yet-to-be-constructed bicycle and pedestrian overpass between 7th and 8th, which is circled in blue. The new overpass is in the TSP, and we anticipate that the bicycle and pedestrian traffic will move from 12th to this new bridge, so we think it's the right location for a viewpoint. And there's an opportunity to design a viewpoint into that design of the bridge. We made assumptions about the alignment of the new bike-ped bridge, and we chose to put the viewpoint in what would be the middle of that, not knowing where it might actually be designed. But we do use GIS to set coordinates for that point and an elevation for that point. So we're pretty confident in how it affects heights emanating from there to the skyline. So today's existing height limitation, and I've indicated where we received testimony from the property that we've received testimony from. Today, there is an 80-foot height limit over most of that site to protect the view from 12th. Moving that view to the bike-ped bridge actually reduces impacts to the northern property, expands impacts a little bit to the southern property, but the property in question, the northern half of that property would go to 250 with an option to bonus the to 325, while the southern portion drops to 70, a 70-foot height limit. So, you know, again, we picked a centered alignment. You could certainly pick another alignment on here. The question was, why would we do this when we don't know exactly where the alignment would be? And so you certainly could look at different alignments along that bridge. The other option would be to keep the viewpoint on 12th Avenue until the bridge is actually done and a viewpoint is put, and then move the viewpoint, which would mean retaining the 80-foot height limit over that property until the bridge is constructed. And I'll turn it over to Salzman.
Well, I think that is the intent of my amendment. Isn't that correct? To keep it at 12th Avenue until we know where the alignment for the pedestrian bridge actually is and then reestablish?
So we can do that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We can do that, or we can wait and then reestablish or reassess once we know where the point is and adjust heights at that time.
Yeah, that would be what I'm recommending.
And that's keeping the existing view corridor that's been there since 1991, is that right?
That's what we would be doing there.
So do we even need to have a discussion on that? Or
yes, because we did propose to change it, so we would need to make an amendment to put it, go back to the existing height limits.
Then I'll second that.
Any further discussion on that? I just want to say I think that's entirely appropriate, and I'll obviously support that as well. C2.
Okay. This is a view of Mount Hood from Tillicum Crossing. Like the riverfront, there are 5 locations on bridges where you can see Mount Hood today, and all those, again, would be blocked by development in the future. This one from Tillicum, protecting it has the least impacts to development than all of the views from the bridges.
Oh, thanks a lot.
We heard from one property owner where this height, this view corridor crosses, and there would be a height limitation. We call this the Ivon Street property. This whole site is an IH, heavy industrial use. It's being rezoned to an EX, so it has no height limitations because it's a heavy industrial site. The EX, then we would apply height limits to it. Within the view corridor, it would be 60 feet. Outside the view corridor, it would be 100 feet base with an option to bonus to 250. You also see on this map the river environmental overlay zone that would be applied to all sites along the riverfront, including this one. The area I circled in red, which is outside of the overlay zone in the view corridor, is about 0.9 acres. It's larger than a city standard city block, so we feel there's a lot of space on this site to get to those taller heights and be able to protect that view corridor. So we recommend keeping the view corridor and height limits on the site. And I'll turn it over to
Commissioner Salzman
for that one. Yes.
I think you made a pretty persuasive case just now. I proposed this amendment because it was, I felt, a piece of property that has some potential development. For what? I'm not quite sure, but it could be residential, it could be commercial. I think the owner has some interesting visions for that property, and that he felt limited by this proposal. So that's why I put forward the amendment. But I can't say that I'm in it 100%. I just...
Commissioner, we don't have an amendment specifically from you on this. Is it to not propose this view corridor? Is that your amendment?
I think that's what it would be, yeah.
So I'll chime in on this one. I actually was persuaded by the staff work that we should maintain this view corridor. And what ultimately persuaded me was the demonstration that these sites are still highly developable, even with the view corridor remaining intact.
And I can't say I disagree with that, having heard your presentation there.
Thank you.
So if there's no second, it stays as that direct.
Are you okay with that? Okay, very good. Next item, please, is C3, view of the Vista Bridge. This is also Commissioner Saltzman.
So today there is an existing view from 18th Avenue and height limits associated with that of about 30 to 45 feet along the northern side of Jefferson Street. The recommendation coming out of Planning and Sustainability Commission was to go to 75 feet along the northern side of the street because Jefferson Street is a commercial corridor along a light rail stop. Going to 75 feet does impact the view from 18th from 14th Avenue. I spoke wrong. From 14th Avenue there, it would have some intrusion into the view. This view from 14th is a view from a car or bicycle. You can't see the bridge from the sidewalk, and there isn't an opportunity to develop a viewpoint here. So Planning and Sustainability Commission also entered a new viewpoint in addition to the view from 14th, and that new viewpoint would be at Collins Circle, which is at 18th. And this is a public open space next to the light rail stop where a viewpoint could be developed, and the 75 feet does not impact that view. So that's what Planning and Sustainability recommended, and staff would continue to make that recommendation. And I'll turn that over to you for discussion.
I didn't actually offer that amendment.
I think it's the mayor.
There are three commissioners who were interested in discussing it. There weren't any amendments put on the table. And that's the mayor, Commissioner Fish, and Commissioner Udaly.
Could we get that photo back by any chance? Or did something just...
Well, it's written in our script what their amendment is.
Right, I need to see the image.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I am confused by these images because don't they both depict what the bridge, the view would look like with possible development? Neither
that's
of them
right.
are current.
This is, both of these depict what it would look like with 75 feet allowed along the northern portion. The top view is from 14th Avenue, which is where you cross I-405.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom view is then down at 18th at Collins Circle.
And this is the same building in both?
So the building that you see, if you look at the top picture, the building that is encroaching then upon the view is then in the lower picture, the one that is immediately to the right.
Okay. I mean, I raised this, out of all the view corridors that were in play, I felt like this was the most unique one because unlike the mountain, which you can see from a very, you know, variety of vantage points throughout the city, you really only have one opportunity to see the bridge, and it's a beautiful bridge, and it's an iconic view. So do
yes,
we have any before photos to compare? I mean, I'm just finding this a little challenging to...
I don't think there's a before photo in this set of pictures. It's, and we can certainly bring that back to you if you'd like to see one. I will point out that you can see the bridge from Southwest 14th. Then because of the street and the topography, you can't see it again until about Collins Circle. So there's really these two places are the places from which you can protect this view.
So I'd like to join Commissioner Udaly's amendment and keep Vista Bridge current protection as a view corridor from I-405 to the bridge, lower the heights to 25 from 20th to the bridge and 50 feet from 405 to Southwest 20th, and then also remove the proposed Southwest, or SW, whatever that means, 72, as a view of the Vista Bridge.
Okay.
And I would like to see the... Just a side-by-side comparison would be really helpful because I'm just not clear on how significant that change is.
Okay.
So that's
Thanks.
A motion and a second on C3. And I had one just additional question on this. So when you say the view from Collins Circle, is that from the sidewalk? Where is that view from?
Sure. So there's actually a circle in the middle of the road. It's like a roundabout. there.
I'm familiar with the circle. I'm just trying to picture where
it's from. There's not actually a sidewalk there. I would call it kind of a goat path where people cross anyway. And so the pedestrian connectivity would need to be improved, and a sidewalk would need to be constructed across there for it to actually be
Okay, so you literally meant earlier then, and I wasn't sure, but since you literally meant you would have to construct a public space in order to really create this view.
You'd want to improve the space that's there that's really being used kind of ad hoc as a way for people to cross the street.
Okay. And just so I'm clear, and I think I asked you this in a staff session, from the Vista Bridge itself, either of these configurations, obviously the status quo, or alternatively, even if we did this, you still do not block the view
of Mount Hood from Vista Bridge?
Yes.
No, we've recommended lowering heights to protect that view.
Could I see, and I think you may already have drawn one up, it may have just been one of those things I imagine at 3 in the morning. As long as you're doing a before
picture,
you
want to see that
picture
too?
Could you give me a rendering, nothing fancy, just like this is great.
Yep.
Could you please superimpose what the view from the Vista Bridge would be like under this configuration?
Mm-hmm. That'd
be helpful for me.
And I believe, I will definitely bring those back, but I believe in the packet that we gave you from the briefing before the hearings, both of those are in that
I think
packet,
it was. Yeah, I vaguely remember that. Yeah. So I'll.
But we can
I'll
definitely bring it back.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And if
I appreciate
might
it.
Amend what I just said. There's no harm in keeping SW72 as a view at the Vista
That's
Bridge.
That's true.
So would that be all right if we do that as well?
Sure.
I've actually got one near my home that I want to have a little circle in the middle so I can look out on Mount Hood.
It is a public open space that's not well utilized because of the way that it's configured. So
we can make it more welcoming.
And I like goat path. That would could also be called a desire line, couldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Nice to have options.
Good. So we've got C4. We've already taken care of, so we're now at C5, Japanese
Garden.
Yeah,
and that's, again, quickly, this one was already an amendment that was proposed and seconded to extend the view corridor downslope a bit more so that the potential trees impacting this view could be addressed. And
I think we have this one by acclamation.
Yeah, that's right. Is there any further discussion on this item? So we'll see this one back on January 18th. So that moves us to transportation.
Thank you.
And we're starting with the I-5 Rose Quarter.
Did we already do the Water Avenue
realignment? Did I miss one?
Yeah. It's coming up.
Oh, yeah, it's coming up.
Okay. All right, good afternoon. Maurizio Leclerc, PBOT.
Art Pierce, also from PBOT.
So let's switch gears here. We have a new PowerPoint. So the amendment, the packet D, I believe, has a table of proposed TSP project amendments. So for discussion are Water Avenue and the Rose Quarter interchange projects related. I have a technical issue. What happens if we don't discuss the other ones? They are
as consent.
Consent, right? So. Is that the understanding?
I believe. Sally, you want to clarify that? How are we handling the TSB ones, please?
Yeah. All right. So we staff has proposed some. We received a lot of testimony. In some cases, we have some technical amendments to the TSP list. For example, reconcile the work that we're doing on emergency with fire and police and emergency response, changing a few classifications here and there, but we consider them at this point minor amendments. Of course, you had the package before you, and if you had, you need, we are happy to discuss any of them with you. For discussion and with a motion, or at least are the Water Avenue and the Rose Quarter. For the first one, it's a request from OMSI, and there is no amendment. I don't think there's an amendment proposed, but so we go through a motion. In the second one, there is an amendment from Commissioner Salzman, so we'll get into it. So on Water Avenue, the request from OMSI to add a project that was left out, basically, if you can read the map, this is what OMSI is today, and you see a big S, that's Water Avenue, and we've moved it to the east. As part of previous processes. Now, the OMSI just finished a master plan, and which you can see at a high level, conceptual level on the right. And basically what they call for is to realign Water Avenue, what you see here in light orange. For, you know, basically the Water Avenue run parallel to the railroad tracks. That would allow Water Avenue to serve a more local function, to serve their internal campuses, you know, kids coming in, you know, local service stuff. This Water Avenue is a critical connection this side of the railroad because it's the only real big major street, so a lot of trucks and traffic goes through it. This will push it to the side and allow OMSI to have a more pedestrian-oriented campus. Also, the design, you know, what they have in their master plan and what we would be recommending in the TSP, it's a wide street, but primarily with a lot of new facilities. You can see where the trees are, a bike-separated facility running to the west of the railroad track, and then a large sidewalk on the other side that would serve the OMSI new sites. And in the middle, there would be local the circulation that we and what that water carries today. So our staff recommendation is to add it to the TSP list as a Water Avenue Realignment Phase 2, and we'll be bring back details later as to what the definition is.
And I'd be glad to propose that.
Okay. Any seconds?
Very good. So okay. We have a proposal and a second for D1. Thank you.
So secondly, as part of testimony, you heard a lot about this project. It's basically three TSP projects that make up the I-5 Broadway Weiler interchange project. Also referred to as the Rhodes Quarter Interchange Project. So we want to provide you a brief summary of the process. We have 2 years that we worked on this. Some of you were here and voted for it in the past, but for benefit of the conversation and the new council members, here's a history, as well as what the big ideas were, the elements of it, and the amendment. So basically staff is saying no to remove these projects from the TSP, but the Commissioner Salzman has amendments to an action item that accompanies these TSP. And you will find that on Volume 5A, page 114, Action Item 120, for those of you who memorize the Central City Plan.
That's not nice.
Oh, that.
Yeah, that one, yes. To provide the proper context, we had to go back to the 1960s and the radical transformation of the area. And that provides context to what we're trying to do and what the project actually, the heart of the project is. Basically, this area used to be Albina, the heart of the African-American community, a stable place. You can see here a picture, 1950, with a grid. It was also before that part of the city of Albina. But, you know, major interventions in the 1960s, the building of I-5, Emmanuel Hospital, Memorial Coliseum, radically changed the area and led a lot of displacement and really broke apart what used to be a community. You can see Memorial Coliseum and a sea of parking around it, you know, that later became Rose Quarter. So a lot of change, and from a transportation perspective, you know, large community impact. From a transportation perspective, it led the area divided in half. You can see there what the pattern is today, large super blocks, not a very pedestrian-friendly, human-scale place, and with a big barrier that runs with I-5 running through the middle of it. As part of it, so that set the framework for the Northeast Quadrant Plan. We did an inventory of historic resources, as you can see, compared to Elliott and Irvington, how much was lost. Yellow, orange, and red are historic properties built before 1960, so that provided context, and you know, we also learned about some key left sites that are remaining, like the left bank that used to be the Dude Ranch, and provided, you know, it was a place during the jazz era in which great jazz players played. You can see our Louis Armstrong at the bottom there. So that fed into the context of what we wanted to do. At the same time, you know, the freeway was built, and that provides a regional, a very important regional function, actually state and national function as part of the interstate system. So it funnels traffic from I-5 from the north and south, US 30 from across the river, I-405, also from across the river, and I-84. So it's a major interchange. Usually in cases like this, you know, when major interchanges come together, and interchange gets bigger to accommodate all the traffic. What happens here is the opposite. It narrows down, and as it goes under Broadway Weiler, everything narrows down to two lanes, and there are no shoulders provided. So since the very, you know, soon after it was built, all the way, the following decades, it became, you know, a problem. But at the same time, it provides regional mobility. It also provides access to Lower Albina, the Moda Center, Lloyd District, and much of North and Northeast Portland. So because it became a problem, it has a design problem throughout the decades. The region and all that tried to find a solution for it. The latest one was the Greeley-Banfield project proposed in 1996. But basically this, you know, trying to address that issue that it's kind of a bottleneck. So that project significantly expanded the freeway with a new flyover that kind of goes to where Wheeler Avenue is today, and also provided, expanded the width of the freeway and the footprint of it. It distorted all the local connections, and it would have meant the loss of sidewalks and bicycle connections galore. So I'll come back to compare this project to the one that we replaced it with, the North-Northeast Quadrant. So with that context, they need to address a regional problem on the freeway, and they need to address local connections and placemaking. We engaged in 2010 with all that on the North-Northeast Quadrant plan led by the Bureau of Planning, and that led to the adaptive plan in 2012 and the facility plan that is part of ODOT's adoption. It was adopted by the Oregon Transportation Commission, and subsequently this freeway project was adopted by the region, and is now in the regional transportation plan. So we started with a committee of 30 members, broad representation in the mm-hmm. local community as well as regional representation. And we went through 19 meetings with the community, 14 subcommittees, many public events, over 85 community meetings, and about 3,000 people directly participated in this. We developed over 70 options, and we set broad goals for the north, for the land use side and for the transportation side. On the land use side, we're expected to have, as part of this plan, that now is in the central, embedded in the Central City Plan, 8,000 new housing units and 9,000 new jobs. As we begin to analyze the area, we know that development has happened along the red and the blue line, you know, along Lloyd. You can see development, but you don't see much in the area of the freeway. You haven't seen much, except it's very auto-dominated, and there's a lot of potential there that hasn't been materialized, that hasn't been tapped. And we even called it, you know, the hole in the donut. And that's the effect of the freeway that it has on development as well. So the plan, we worked together with all that and determined to have two major goals for addressing the freeway. Improve the safety and operations of the interchange itself. It has the highest freeway crash rates in the state. It's short weaving sections, and as part of the design of the freeway. And also it's a top freight bottleneck in the United States. But also, at the same time, improve the interface with local streets, improve bicycle safety, mobility, increase pedestrian connectivity, and also enhance traffic and access into the Rose Quarter and so forth. So the primary barrier is the north-south connection and barrier that I-5 creates. You see in orange where there are no crossings of I-5. So between Russell and Broadway, there are no crossings in between Wyler to the north and between Wyler, which is actually, can I use the mouse? From here to Multnomah, there's no crossing either. So particularly, the freeway created a barrier east-west, and that's some of what this project addresses. Since the adoption of the plan, you know, we discussed a lot about conflicts in this area known as the box, which is right here. This is where all the traffic comes together, streetcar, people walking to east and west, going to the events and the Rose Garden Arena. Everything comes together, and it's a lot of conflict. There's a lot of well-documented bicycle collisions. And, for example, as part of the Vision Zero Action Plan, Broadway is identified as a high-crash corridor and is, in fact, the number one bicycle high-crash corridor in the city.
It's number one?
Yeah, no. For bicycle. Yeah. So in terms of context, you know, this is what you had before, and the old design and the new design. I'll provide a little bit more context, but you can see already that, you know, we're gaining connectivity here with Hancock and with a proposed Clackamas connection. We're keeping primarily the old grid over Broadway, Wyler, Williams, and Vancouver. And north, in this case, would be to your left. This is a bit, you know, this is the old design that basically would have shifted the grid, Vancouver-Williams, and make turn them into what we call frontage roads, basically a large interchange. This is the old design to your left. And instead, what this project is providing, more east-west connections, lit, cover over the freeway that lessen the noise and visual impact of the freeway, provide potentially some open space, and some new bicycle and pedestrian facilities. In terms of the freeway itself, the old design would have had it a lot more lanes, and the width of it would have been a lot bigger, and actually flying ramps over First Avenue to the east and Wheeler to the west. And the new design adds one auxiliary lane in each direction, plus the rebuilding of the on and off ramps to accommodate that space. The new design is also less costly, and it has a smaller footprint. So in terms of land use and development, it was important to provide access to the Portland Public School Masters site, which is now in the plan, the Central City Plan Master Plan site. We do that by realigning Flint. So Flint would be, which goes straight north-south and now goes diagonally, and opened up that area for potential redevelopment. Also, a key idea that developed at the time was the box around the box. We mentioned the box was very colluded, a lot of traffic, a lot of conflict. What if we were to provide a north and south connection that is more quiet space for pedestrian and cyclists to navigate, so you don't have to enter the box in the first place, and you can ride around with your kid and so forth and avoid the area altogether. So that's what you see when you see this design. This is basically a close-up of the interchange from a local perspective. So here you have Vancouver Williams, and all these will be replaced, but basically by having to widen the freeway, you have to replace all the bridges. There's just not enough space to widen without doing that. So that allows us to replace all these bridges and build them up to standard. These are old bridges, so things would be seismically upgraded. And here we have one lid in the north with this new Hancock connection, maintaining the connectivity on Broadway, Wilder, Vancouver, Williams, and adding a ped bike-only bridge at Clackamas. There's also benefits in the local traffic. In a way, we're going to change pattern. Today, people coming from Broadway have to go through the box, go several extra blocks, and then go through the Rose Quarter, which is basically an on-ramp during much of the day, to access. Now we're basically moving the on-ramp to a higher point on Wilder so that there will be much less traffic going through the Rose Quarter. So that assists in the redevelopment of the Rose Quarter itself. And here's a concept drawing of what could be, with a lid in the north, a lid in the middle, and a Clackamas bridge that is likely to be curved because of design. So from our perspective, it's a good project for the region and for us. From a freeway perspective, it's been estimated that it may lead up to roughly 50% reduction in crushes based on simulation by adding the aux lane. Less congestion as a result of those crashes, which is important for reliability purposes, for freight. Also, the shoulders themselves allow people, cars that are broken down to be moved, and also ambulances and emergency vehicles to respond quickly. In terms of local circulation, we will have new facilities, new overpasses, seismically upgraded, better bicycle pedestrian facilities, wide sidewalks, bi-separated facilities. We have better connectivity that will assist development, and the lifts themselves will create placemaking opportunities and also open space.
So could you tell us more about the lifts?
Yeah.
And, I think it's a great vision. Mm-hmm. It's also my understanding that the funding isn't there in this package for that. So tell me more about the vision.
The project since then has been funded, by HB 2017. And our understanding is it funds the whole thing. It's funding the lids. It's funding the local improvements at this point.
So, four slides previous, you showed us, right there. So, which of those lids are actually funded in this project?
At this point, it's the northern lid, which is here, and the middle lid that replaces Vancouver, Williams, and
Broadway. So is it the whole area 3, 4, and 5 that are designated there as 3, 4, and 5?
Plus the bridge here.
Okay, so why are we leaving off the central one? Why not just close it?
That's a great question. The latest design has made the space smaller. So at this point, there are two reasons. One is that it's not necessary to build the structure above. But also, there's at some point, you connect lids and they become a tunnel. So there may be some technical issues in which there's new ventilation and other systems, different depth and clearances that need to be applied. So, again, this is a conceptual design. All that is just starting the process, and we may learn a lot about the LITs, and we really want to maximize the opportunities that we can.
Well, I just hope that, and I understand that, and I wanted to just get this out there on the record. I hope conceptually, you know, we think bigger about this, because this is an area of the city where you could redefine what this portion of the city is through basically capping the freeway there, which is technologically completely feasible. Mm-hmm. And you see in other cities, they put pedestrian ways, public spaces, fountains, parks, trees. I mean, there's really virtually an unlimited amount of things you could do in a part of our city that's really been neglected.
Yeah, no doubt about
so
it.
I hope we keep pushing up the food chain.
Yeah.
For
so far, the cost does not cover that gap, though. But yeah, but that's certainly the expected.
It never covers the interesting stuff, does it?
I think
why we have to be persistent.
Correct.
Horacio, can I jump in for a sec?
Yes.
Can I just ask for some additional information between now and just put on the record? So I want to make sure that as we're making these decisions, we have an agreed-upon baseline of facts. And so you referenced bike safety and some data on bike crashes, accidents. You know, as someone who is more of a pedestrian these days, I'm actually alarmed at what the behavior I see on our streets. But I'd like to see that data if I could.
Okay.
On the question of the accidents and the risks currently of the I-5 interchange. I'm talking about when you're going south on I-5, merging to get onto the Banfield while traffic's coming in, merging to get into your lane, which has got to be one of the most dangerous merges in both ways. I'd like to have a better sense of the existing data on crashes and accidents and property damage. Because it seems to me we should be able to agree on a baseline set of data there, hopefully. When you said earlier that some of the connectivity was connected to PPS, I take it you meant PPS in the sense that it's the Blanchard building, not necessarily PPS as a long-term tenant of that site, correct?
Correct, yeah.
So whatever is contemplated there, it creates the connectivity. The question of having a shoulder for a car to get off, or a disabled car, or an emergency vehicle, that seems like a pretty basic thing. Could I just have the citation to the whatever the law is that encourages us to have shoulders? It seems a no-brainer, but I'd just like to make sure I understand what the current state of the law is in encouraging shoulders and why that's important. Freight mobility, we have lots of different policies about freight mobility so one of our goals is we want a truck that's going through the city to be able to get through I-5 in a reasonable amount of time. Do we have some good data right now on how congestion is impacting freight mobility? And that's probably part of the quadrant plan, but if you could just point me in the right direction, because I'd like to look at that. Sometimes when we talk about congestion, sometimes the debate is framed in terms of some congestion's okay because if you fix the congestion, it'll get worse. That seems to be the argument that we hear from some people. And the problem is they both have climate impacts. Mm-hmm. Current congestion is not so good, and we've acknowledged that from the Rose Quarter to Vancouver, that part of I-5 runs through neighborhoods that historically have had their unfair share of bad air and environmental pollution. So everyone's going to have a different view about congestion and its impacts. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts you have, though, about congestion under the status quo versus the potential growth in congestion?
Yeah, okay.
And then finally, there's a lot of conversations going on now about reclaiming some history at this site. I won't go into all the details here, but there's a lot of well-intentioned people who have said that there's a way to honor the legacy of Albina, and the missed opportunities under the Albina plan by reimagining the Rose Quarter. And my what I've seen of that depends very much on changing the connectivity of that area, both to the east and to the south. And in a sense, undoing some of the damage by recreating the street grid and then opening up opportunities for more human-scale development and then thinking about how we reverse some history that has not quite worked out very well and in some instances we're not very proud of. And it will be helpful for me to better understand as we go through this how much of what we're talking about here facilitates the kinds of creative planning that people are doing at the grassroots level to reimagine that district, particularly around connectivity. So those are things I'd like to know more about, and I'd like to get as much as possible an understanding of agreed upon facts. We can have debates about trade-offs, and we can have debates about priorities, and in a perfect world, we might spend the money differently somewhere else. Those are legitimate questions.
Sure.
But I want to make sure that I have the baseline understanding to go through. And I have to say that seeing some of these visions for a reimagined Rose Quarter is very exciting. And to the extent our current circulation there works against those visions, that's very important to me.
Yeah.
And that happens to be an equity play as much as it is a transportation play. So those are just... I'm sorry to load you up, but those
okay.
are things that
I think we can address
me.
Some of them as part of the conversation.
Even if you just point me in the right direction.
Yeah, we'll get you some facts. I think I have a little picture for the bike crashes here. Of course, I didn't bring. but yes, we agree that we have this project would help development, not just for the area, but for the central city, and actually allows us to have this multimodal mixed-use area designation that actually it lifts the standards, the congestion mobility standards that we need to apply as part of redevelopment. So in a way, it makes redevelopment easier. So
it might be worth going in more detail on the specifics of the MMA. I think this is an important piece of the conversation.
Okay. So basically, we have cases actually in the central east side, for example, where ODOT said put limits on development because of the impacts on the freeway. So the Oregon planning system has an internal conflict. One is develop downtowns, develop mixed-use areas. At the same time, say don't add too much new cars to the freeways. Well, what happens is that which one wins? Basically, by developing downtowns, you're actually leading to less traffic overall, right? No more connectivity, more pedestrian traffic. So in a way, this... the state recognized that and created this MMA designation that basically says if you meet the certain requirements, land use, connectivity, density, which certainly the central city meets, then you don't have to respond to all that saying you're adding, with this new zone change, you're adding too much traffic onto the freeway. So in a way, by having an MMA, it's easier to densify, to apply new land use changes to the central city. However, safety standards do remain. So when actually a development does have an impact on the freeway system, then ODOT cannot say, we need to respond to that. That is the case today. This is the worst safety spot in this state. So therefore, this project allows us to pursue the MMA designation, and ODOT has given us concurrence that they would, they agree that this is an MMA. So long as we have this project in the books, because this is how we address safety in the North-Northeast Quadrant area.
So okay. The Rose Quarter project itself is part of us getting concurrence from ODOT to have an MMA to further the development that we want to see on adjacent parcels.
Yeah. And this is, into the future. Any new land use amendment for the central city, has one less hurdle to do, technically speaking. So to summarize, and then we can get back into what some of the Commissioner Fish's questions. This is from our perspective, it's an innovative design. It took a lot of compromise, but I think we ended up with a good solution. For us, it could have a complete rebuild and seismic upgrade of facilities, critical new improved pedestrian facilities, lifts over the freeway, enhancing accessibility and livability, and redevelopment. So. We think that this is potentially a good move. We very much agree with the mayor and Commissioner Salzman and Commissioner Fish. So, the Planning Commission deliberated on this as they put together their recommended draft for you, And they added in this action item some conditions on the on these TSP projects. So I'll read them. I'll paraphrase them because they're actually long. But basically, one, we want the whole element, all of the elements of the project, not just the freeway, but actually, we, as part of the city's participation, we want the lids, we want the pedestrian crossings, we want the local connections and improved connections and bicycle and pedestrian facilities. Secondly, we should have city council-sponsored equity strategy that begins to put together, you know, the opportunity that this provides into the larger framework that we're talking about. So in this case, it says, condition on the development of a city council-supported